This is Robin Collier of Cultural Energy. Today, we bring you a talk on mules and burros in the Southwest and Latin America, given by Susan Boyle on June 8, 2008, at the annual conference of the Old Spanish Trail Association at Oque Owingue Pueblo. The Old Spanish Trail was a route used by the Spanish and Mexicans for trade between California and New Mexico and for thousands of years by Native Americans. Pat Koloff introduces Susan Boyle.
Okay, this afternoon we've got lots of mules and donkeys and horses and stuff. We have Susan Boyle with us this afternoon. Susan received her doctorate in American social history from the University of Missouri, Columbia. She's a Fulbright scholar, and she continues to work as an independent researcher, focusing on socioeconomic developments in New Mexico during the 19th century. As a National Park Service employee, Dr. Boyle has worked on a wide range of topics, such as general management plans, interpretive plans, heritage tourism, the study of cultural landscapes and linear resources, and the development of effective strategies for successful partnerships. She's currently working as a historian for the National Trail System Office in Santa Fe. Susan Boyle.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me. I'm really delighted to be here for a variety of reasons. I live relatively close to here. I live in El Rito. And in the last year and a half, I had the opportunity of coming back to New Mexico, which is a wonderful state because of all its rich cultural heritage and the opportunities that I have for people who are working on the topic that we talked about this today. In certain ways, all the presentations you've heard so far and mine form like a complex weaving. We started with weaving and then we went to sheep, and you see the relationship between them, both sheep and weavings in New Mexico, which are called local manufacturers, that's what they used to call them, really energize the economy of this province. And whenever you have weaving, whenever you have culture, whenever you have people, you usually have trading. And we talked about Taos. Taos was one of the major trade fairs in a fairly large geographic area. All rivalries among Indian groups really disappear at the time of trading. All the antagonisms moved away while we traded. Trading was essential for survival, not just here, but elsewhere in this area. Trading was also made possible because we had a system of transportation. And that's why I'm linking to what I'm going to be talking about, which is mules and donkeys. And I'm talking about Spanish culture. If you don't like the term Spanish, you can use Hispano. I think New Mexican is very restrictive because you find out that many of the people who operated in New Mexico were not necessarily natives of New Mexico, and with their Spanish last names, you're really not quite sure exactly where they came from. So I'm speaking about Spanish or Hispano culture. And before I really get into mules, I'm going to use a quotation from Charles Loomis, who is also a famous New Mexican historian, and I think it's an appropriate introduction for the rest of my presentation. And what Loomis wrote is, "The Spanish introduction of the horse, mule, burro, and ox to America marked the longest stride so many people in so short a time have ever taken in the art of transportation." So we have the introduction of these animals who really make a tremendous amount of difference in people's lives. They impacted cultures, but that's really not what I have time to speak today, since my time is relatively limited. But what I'm going to say, and would like to emphasize, that the Spanish culture in the southwestern United States, combined with special environmental factors such as the nature of the terrain, the lack of food and water, to develop a system that it was in certain way unique for its total, almost complete reliance on these two animals, the mules and the donkeys. They really have been essential in transporting merchandise in this area. Now, this geographic area that I'm talking about is a lot more extensive than one would like to think. Anyway, when I'm talking about geography, it's essential because environmental factors determine modes of transportation for the most part at a time when we did not have the technology to change the terrain. What I'm thinking of, what I'm saying is that in the eastern United States and eastern Canada as well, you have a wide network of rivers. Water transportation is a lot more efficient and cheap than transportation over land. So you really see the development here in the arid areas, mountainous areas with rugged terrain, the development of a system of transportation that is well fitted to those conditions. And that's what my talk is going to really focus on. You have to understand that the Spanish came from a tradition of muleteering and extremely sophisticated horse skills. They inherited that from the Arabs. The Arabs occupied Spain for a number of centuries, and really they're going to bring that tradition to America. For example, mules were used until central in transportation in the Civil War. They were used as late as World War II in Burma and Italy. And the organizations and methods that we see here in the Southwest, the United States, were the same almost than the ones seen the Western Hemisphere in South America. This is an image of mule trains in the province of Jujuy in northern Argentina. This is almost in the frontier from Bolivia. This is about 1900. And I have another next image that really shows also trade fairs. Like in this area, they have extensive trade fairs, and most of the merchandise was carried on the back of mules. As you can see, this is very rugged terrain. This is about an elevation of 13, 14,000 feet. It's very arid, difficult to move, both people and goods. I don't have a historic photograph, but this is a portion of El Camino del Inca, which is a major road that extends for about 10,000 miles in South America. This is in Bolivia in a place called El Choro, and you can see the narrow and difficult terrain that the animals had to traverse. So in this area of South America, which is an area I know well, I'm a native of Argentina, you have an economy, a trading economy. This is through most of the 19th century and part of the 20th century that is built on the backs of mules. Mules provided the goods that were necessary in the Bolivian mines like Potosí, and they had to come to the port of Buenos Aires, and you're talking about the traffic of mules that was essential to that economy for more than a century, probably maybe 2.5 centuries or so. So that's what you have in the Western Hemisphere. You have something similar in Western Canada, and you're also going to have something quite similar in the gold mining camps in California. But today we're really talking about the old Spanish Trail, but also I need to talk about the trails that are closely related to that, like El Camino Real de Tierra Adentro and the Santa Fe Trail. And even in El Camino Real de los Tejas, mules and donkeys really were the essential element in this transportation of goods over long distance and rugged terrain. Mules were incredibly valuable, and according to most accounts, the old Spanish Trail was really initiated in a search for mules. The opening of the Santa Fe Trail with an enormous increase in commerce made it almost absolutely necessary to have enough animals to be able to carry goods over this terrain. Now, there's two kinds of mules that we're talking about. We're talking a draft mule, which I am going to call the American mule. There's a much larger animal. And this is a type of animal that were used by the army during the Civil War, during the Mexican War. They're much heavier, larger animals. In California, we had, actually, in order to do this presentation, I have searched for many images. This is two images of mules being used as draft animals. The top image is a Henry Jackson image from the 1890s. It's an image from Mexico. The bottom image is an image of the Borax team. It's a 20-mule team that was used in Borax, California. Again, each of these topics probably could take a whole presentation on themselves because they're really complex, and I find them fascinating. And again, any of these topics are, from my perspective, incredibly complex because, like, transportation and trails are, in certain way, reflections of the communities, of the society, and of the culture in which these people who travel these trails operate. So there is a tremendous amount of interpretation, of education, of this constant learning that we do when we deal with trails. Like the previous speakers showed you in their images, there is an incredible wide possibilities for research in any aspect that you look on these historic trails. You can learn, talk, explore the routes, explore the people who use the routes, explore their culture, explore their changes, and how they evolve through time. So the opportunities for research are really incredible. However, we don't have an awful lot of time today, so I will try to restrain myself and limit to my spiel. In order to have a pack train, and again, most of the mule used in the old Spanish trail were as pack animals, not as draft animals that dragged the wagons. But mules were per excellence, the preferred packing animal. And so were the donkeys. And I'm going to show a lot of pictures of donkeys because they're usually ignored. And I think that from the evidence that I have found in this research, they were much more prevalent than we give them credit for. Anyway, I'm identifying four prerequisites for a successful pack train. The first one is sound animals. Mules, donkeys. Horses had major problems. Oxen were very good about pulling heavy weights, but they were rather slow. And then in the Andes, they use llamas a lot. They are a lot lighter animals. Second is good packing equipment. Third, and very, very important, crucial, and something that is often forgotten, is capable crews. You needed capable people to be able to manage large number of animals that have to be packed and repacked every day. And finally, you have to have a suitable cargo. And on this, there will be some issues. Like I said, a lot of the photography, historic photography that survives, really focuses on donkeys. And donkeys are the poor man beast of burden. Very, very widespread use. As a matter of fact, when I was doing research for this, actually a couple of months ago, somebody in my office told me, oh, I have a whole bunches of pictures of mules. And upon close examination, I realized that she only has pictures of donkeys. Most of those pictures were not mules. By the way, yesterday somebody asked me, what's a mule? Is the offspring between a donkey and a mare, okay? And it's a sterile animal. I mean, I think that you probably know, but you never know when you come to give a presentation. So please ask if I say something that sounds ridiculous. Donkeys were very preferred because they were much docile than mules. And they could carry up to half their weight, which is very makes them a very effective beast of burden. And I have a lot of images of donkeys. This is some of the donkeys and mules. And this, most of the images that I have from here on are from this area. So to recap a little bit, in the southwest, the United States inherited this tradition of muleteering from Spain. Theoretically, when Queen Isabella in 1486 was getting ready to oust the Moors from Granada, they rely on large numbers of mules, according to some account, more than 14,000 mules. Mules were highly regarded. They had housing similar to those of the horses. So there was a very recognizable, very important animal within their culture. Now, most of the packing that we see in the Southwest is carried by what we call the Mexican mule. It's a smaller animal, it's hardier, and supposedly it was bred for service in a semi-arid Southwest. They're relatively small, 700 to 800 pounds. Again, like the burro, they can carry half of their own weight or more. They have incredible strength, endurance, and they recover much more rapidly after periods of hardship. Mules fare better than horses when water is scarce and forage is poor. And according to the literature, horses will eat and drink themselves to death. Mules never do that. But of course, most of the literature I read is very pro-mule, because anybody that focuses on the stuff will only see their positive. Now, physically, the mules have small, very hard hoofs that are much better suited than those than the horse or the oxen or other animals for the type of terrain that we have here. And really, as many of you know, mules are supposed to be really intelligent, canny. They're a combination of instinct. They're stubborn, but they're stubborn most cases because you know you're asking them to do something stupid. I don't have an awful lot of experience with horses and mules, but I have found that I used to work in a lookout, and the mules were the preferred animal to bring loads to the lookout. And this is not in the Middle Ages, this is only in the early 1970s. And the Forest Service at this time still relied almost solely on mules to outfit their lookout towers. So mules really had a lot of advantages. Now, because I don't have a tremendous amount of time, I'm kind of going to go very lightly over the good packing equipment. Now, I am going to focus just on one item, which is the aparejo. The aparejo, or the pack saddle, again, comes from the Moors in Spain, theoretically about the 18th century. It really consists of two leather bags that are stuffed with grass, dried grass, and join at the top to form an arch or a gable. And they have pictures of them. It was designed specifically to resist condensation and distribute the weight over the mule's rib cage and away from the back. And the American described it as nearer to what I consider perfection in a pack saddle than any other form of pack saddle yet invented. So Americans recognize this, and this is, again, I'm a historian and I love Jackson's photograph. Jackson has two pictures of Mexican packers with their mules. Again, I use this photograph to identify the various parts of the equipment. Hispanos were known to carefully custom fit each mule to its own aparejo. And they even identify the aparejos with really embroidered symbols. So they were really particular about this. And they put an awful lot of effort into this. This is, again, a picture in New Mexico. And then you show you probably one mule and a number of donkeys. The picture does not have an origin, but I was looking at it, and I think it's a road from Truchas, Cordoba. That's what it looks to me. But anyway, it's most of the images that I have, you see a combination of donkeys and mules. And by no means have I exhausted all the sources, but in general, I see using the use of both animals. Although I suspect that the army and the government pack trains were differently organized, that these are much more reflected of the local economy and the local transportation strategies. And as I told you before, mules were used extensively by the army, both in the Mexican War, the Civil War. It was such that in 1917, the army published this manual of pack transportation. And if you're interested in mules, you really need to read that because it has all the information. Now, the army admired the Mexican, Spanish, Hispano packing system so much that they adopted not only everything, they kept the Spanish word. They even tell you how to build an aparejo. An aparejo is a pack saddle. It has more than 200 pages of very detailed information. Again, like I told you, how to make an aparejo, how to sling the load, how to lash the load. And it concludes that the pack mule has borne its part and now may be regarded as thoroughly identified with our army as an essential means of transportation. So this is 1917, and they continued to use them until through World War II. Now, for the American West, this is the latest image that I found of a mule carrying stuff. This is 1911, and it's in Wyoming. And this mule is carrying the surveying equipment, which is it looks kind of cumbersome. Originally, I was going to use this image as unsuitable cargo, but it overall didn't look all that bad. But anyway, it was the use is really widespread. Now, so we have the sound animals, we have the equipment, now we need the capable crews. And all observers agreed that Mexicans, Hispanos, had a well-deserved reputation as excellent horsemen and muleteers. And I have to digress here a little bit, because if you have read any of the literature of the 19th century when the Americans first come into New Mexico, they have little, if anything, good to say about the locals. From Josiah Webb to anybody else that has written about this area have incredibly clear ideas how bigoted and how biased against the Hispanos they were. And I'm not going to bore you with this because there is hundreds of evidence of this. However, every single one of them, yeah?
Except for the women.
Yeah. However, all of these folks really marvel at the dexterity and the skill with which the packers harness, they adjusted the merchandise. And this is a typical thing. Half a dozen men usually suffice for 40 or 50 mules. Two men are always engaged at a time in the dispatch of each animal, and they rarely occupied 5 minutes in the complete adjustment of his aparejo and carga. Carga's load. So when you're talking about the people who made the system function, the Mexican, the Hispano packers were the item to have in any of these groups. And experienced travelers suggested that Mexicans be always used as teamsters, for they can catch up and roll up in half the time the average person does. All right, so really by 1850s, the Mexicans were the majority of the packers in the Western United States and Canada. They were very, very successful up the Pacific coast. There are considerable information regarding packing operations, particularly associated with the California gold fields, but also in Canada, in British Columbia. And they were very successful entrepreneurs. They were always in demand. Now, you have to understand, packing requires a variety of skills. You need to be able to secure the loads. You need to how to do intricate knots, which for me is an incredibly difficult task. They have to act as veterinarians. They were blacksmiths. They were farriers. They had to estimate the safe capacity, carrying capacity of an animal. They had to find the right pace at which they used to call them atajos. Atajos is the group of mules that travel together. They had to be able to lift heavy loads. They had to be outstanding at a variety of tasks, and like somebody says, they had to accomplish marvels with the axe and screw key and a young sapling for a level. Finally, the last component, and I'm going to make it on time, is suitable cargo. And mules and donkeys had the ability to carry heavy loads over difficult terrain. Good packers knew that and really took very good care of their animals. And the suitable cargo, I started to find out, I have one image. Again, this is an image from animals carrying doors. Again, this is in the province of Jujuy in northern Argentina. Actually, this is a World Heritage Site. It's called La Quebrada de Humahuaca. It's about 13,000, 14,000 feet, and these poor animals are carrying doors on their backs, which is a very... Actually, those doors are still in place today. They're historic doors, but very interesting story, and quite a bit of similarity with what we have in here, because I have found that very often mules were greatly abused. They were asked to carry impossible loads. Quite often, they died. I mean, they were expected to carry. This is an account. It's not being certified or anything like that. It's associated with a story of a guy called Urquides who used to pack in Idaho, and supposedly he loaded like 500 pounds on the back of the mule. And to ease her work, he developed a tripod. So every so many hours, the load could be taken off the back of the mule so the mule could recover. So there is a concern for the animals, but at the same time, the tendency would be to abuse them. Although if you were a smart packer, you didn't do that. In general, transportation and trade, which are very closely related, are, for me, topics that still are open for an awful lot of research and investigation. I'm just basically trying to highlight the importance of Hispano-Mexican culture in the system of transportation that evolved in this area, in the system of transportation that was central to the old Spanish trail, which is because of its terrain, really, at least during its height between 1829 and 1848, it was not possible for carts and wagons to carry merchandise. So we were dependent on mules and donkeys packing most of the merchandise that went over the trail. I think that very often we forget how things come about. And in this case, it's a really challenging story because you have a variety of cultures. These trails had been used for many, many centuries, as some of the images that we saw this morning testified. And so what we have is a trail with historic trails. It's a wonderful blending of cultures and tales. And it's going to be tales or stories. And we're going to have years of possibilities for studying and coming to conclusions about some of these developments. It's a great topic. National historic trails are great sources for inspiration for many, and they're wonderful educational tools. There is very few things in the school curriculum that could not be addressed through historic trails. I got my propaganda in, Jerry. It was a pleasure being here.
You have been listening to a talk on burros and mules given by Susan Boyle on June 8, 2008 at the annual conference of the Old Spanish Trail Association at Oque Ewingue Pueblo. This and more than 2,000 other segments can be heard online at culturalenergy.org. This is Robin Collier of Cultural Energy, and thanks for listening.